Hey, welcome to Trapital. I'm your host, Dan Runcie. This is your place to gain insights on the business that shapes music, media, and culture. We dive deep into the companies and moguls who start the trends that shape the rest of the business world. In the past 12 years, A24 has become one of the most beloved film studios and brands in all of entertainment. And that's pretty unique for a company that started as a private equity move. This was the brainchild of Daniel Katz from Guggenheim Securities, David Finkel from Oscilloscope Laboratories, and John Hodges, one of the producers from Little Miss Sunshine. They started this company with a countercultural strategy to the rest of Hollywood. While the rest of Hollywood was focused on big IP, tentpole franchises, and fewer but larger releases, A24 went the other route. Low budget, high volume, character-driven stories. And they did it by distributing many of their early films, finding these finalized products, but adding that marketing and the packaging that leaned into the internet and leaned into their user base of consumers that tapped into that and resonated with it as well. And that went off to have this historic run of successful A24 films, Everywhere, Everywhere, All at Once, Hereditary, Uncut Gems, and more. A24 received a $225 million investment that valued the company at $2.5 billion. And after that investment, we started to see some changes. More discussions from A24 about investing into bigger projects, more losses, and more films that didn't quite have the same gravitas as others, and a wider range of people to answer to that likely want to see some type of sale or exit on this investment. And we've seen some of the reports about A24's desire to get into IP, its desire to expand to different genres. But how will this brand that has been such an indie beloved darling for years maintain and keep that same energy despite a lot of these same changes that have made a lot of brands in Hollywood lose that same mystique that we're talking about? That's the focus of today's episode. And to break it all down, I'm joined by Dr. Marcus Collins. He's been on this podcast several times. He's another fellow A24 fan, observer, and someone that has some strong opinions about the company itself. So let's dive in. All right. Today we're here to talk about the one and only A24 with my guy, Dr. Marcus Collins. Welcome back to the pod.
Man, I feel like this is home. I'm glad to be home.
What was it for you that stuck out about A24 that made you want to dig into it?
It feels like I'm studying the Illuminati. It's so like covert, but yet people know about it. And there's so many layers to the onion. There's like a subculture around this brand and the production that they put in the world that feels like right in the crosshairs of what I do. So digging into it felt both novel and familiar.
Part of it is movements or companies that are a bit countercultural or different from everyone else that you see. This company starts at the peak of Hollywood ramping up all the sequels, all the big IP, and they say, no, we're going to go the complete opposite way. We know that there's still an audience that wants to have these unique stories being told, and we want to go about everything a unique way. The marketing, the branding, how we're using the internet, and that creates this unique, identifiable brand. It made me think back to one of the things that you've talked about, Karen that drives a minivan. What do you know about her? And thinking about A24, if you and I were to describe what the A24 consumer looks like, I bet we could do a similar profile.
That's right. And it's interesting, like A24 essentially looked at the world of film and decided to subvert everything. And I think it's pretty spot on that they would do that, because in a lot of ways, creativity is subversion. Taking what is orthodox, taking what is the status quo and contorting it, reshaping it, and refashioning it. And everything about A24, from its business model to the projects that it pursues, to the directors that it hire or even provide an opportunity for them to have their directorial debut, to the genres, the stories, the manner in which they distribute, the marketing communications and merch and activations that go around it. They're all the things that are fundamental to the industry, but completely subverted.
And I'm glad you mentioned the business model piece. We should talk a bit about that, because that in itself is so different, where for the first 10 plus years of their existence, they were focused on these low budget, high volume, character driven films. They were looking for the auteurs that had their own unique perspective on how they were telling their unique stories. The model was so different because so many of the bigger studios at the time were minimizing the number of releases they had, and they were looking for the blockbuster strategy where they say, okay, if we're going to put out Avengers Age of Ultron, that's going to be our big bet this year. From a time perspective, it didn't make sense for them to finance a film for $5 million and hope that it makes $50 million.
That's right.
That just wasn't something that they were doing.
Even from their origins, they were a distributor. They weren't making films. They were hand-picking the films and then finding unique ways to bring it to market. And it's interesting that we think about A24 today as filmmakers, but that wasn't how they started. They started with the curatorial lens that informed the kind of stories they told, the kind of directors that they got behind, the kind of characters that were demonstrative of how they saw the world as an entity, and then would later go make films with that same curatorial lens. And it not only creates consistency in how we think about A24 so that the product, as it were, has consistency, but it's entirely distinctive from the rest of the industry. Even the indie art house industry within the world of film, there's just a very distinctive look, feel, tempo, pacing, timbre to all things A24. And it started by first being an A&R, if you will, like finding the stories you thought were going to blow and go, we're going to get behind it and leverage our relationships to help put it in the right places.
And it highlights how much value add there is in packaging and marketing. They're going to these film festivals. They're finding these finished products, but they're the ones that are putting the spin on it. They get Spring Breakers, the film with James Franco and Vanessa Hudgens and Gucci Mane. They then have that Last Supper viral campaign where James Franco's standing there with his arms open and everyone's around him. Who would have done that?
That's right. That's right. Like their ability to, again, subvert what we would consider a traditional way of bringing a product to market completely changes our expectations, right? Who would have thought Selena Gomez would be in a movie like Spring Breakers, right? And who would have thought that James Franco would play that role of Riff Raff like he did in Spring Breakers and then take that project and bring it to market that is just as subversive as the project in and of itself? I think A24's ability to see the story within the story, to see the subtext in the story, then be able to tell that meta-text in a way that is like compelling and is of the internet. Again, you talk about this timeliness of where the business model sat to understand stories that were made for the cinema, but of the internet, just completely changes not only the manner in which brands go to market, but also it changes the way we think about the economics of movie marketing.
When they got into producing their own films, they already had the groundwork there to make it happen. Moonlight, famously, was the first film that they produced and ended up being one of the most successful and influential films we've seen in the past decade.
That's right.
I believe they bought it for $4 million, makes $65 million. A relatively unknown filmmaker in Barry Jenkins, who had only done one film before that, but he had the IP from the novel in Moonlight, Black Boys Look Blue, and then is able to turn that into this behemoth that changes Hollywood in a way.
I think it says a lot about the value of being able to see potential. And that's not to undermine the origins of Moonlight, but being able to see what it could be in this new modality. I think about this video of T-Pain, and he talks about that he had an offer from a major label that was going to give him $1 million advance. And then he met Akon, and Akon was like, I can't do that. I can give you like $20,000, but you are going to be the biggest artist on the planet. And T-Pain was like, I'm going with Akon, because Akon saw the vision. And of course, we know T-Pain, me, Convict Boy, Nappy Boy, we know who T-Pain is for that very reason, for Akon to be able to see the talent and the potential of T-Pain and be able to convince him to say, listen, I see the vision and I'm going to help you get there in a way that only I can, Akon speaking, we get T-Pain. And the same thing goes with A24 and Moonlight. We probably would have gotten a different Moonlight if that came from a 20th Century Fox, for instance. No shade to 20th Century Fox, but the curatorial lens that's necessary in the way the movie is made and then brought to market makes A24 such an unbelievable force in the marketplace.
You look at each of these movies, there are all these little things that they did that captured that lens of what we're talking about. Ex Machina, which was before Moonlight, they set up the Tinder profile for Alicia Vikander's character.
Amazing. Again, of the internet. It understood the cultural tea leaves, as it were, and saying these are things we're going to subvert. Realizing there's a subtext, there's a metatext to the story that we're telling in the movie. And they want to use that subtext as a way to engage people. And I think that independent movie houses typically understand this well. My favorite marketing campaign ever is Blair Witch Project. And the ability to subvert the status quo of movie marketing, they just did that out of this world. Cloverfield did it later. And then Paranormal Activity. But these are all like indie movie houses. Most recently, that movie Smile from a few years ago. They had like people in these public places with the weird, awkward smile. Like their ability to subvert what is orthodox, I think not only gets people's attention, but their ability to do it in a way that is so connected to the story, not just the superficial context of the story, but the nuances of the actual storytelling is why A24 does it not only so well, but do it so consistently and so sustainably in the way it goes to market.
And this is one of the reasons why they have a true brand, a brand that is distinct with consumers in that way. If I saw someone that was wearing an A24 shirt or A24 hat, I would assume that they are a fan. I could go up to them and ask them, oh, what did you think about Uncut Gems? But if you see someone that's wearing a Paramount shirt, no knock to them, but I would assume that they probably work for Paramount.
It has no meaning, right? Paramount makes films. So you go, oh, you must be in the filmmaking business. But if you saw someone with an A24 shirt on, that way becomes a receipt of their identity. The wearing of the merch becomes cultural production. It becomes a way by which I signify who I am. And you could see someone in A24 t-shirt on, you go, what's your top five? And they'll be like, oh, Hereditary's got to be up there. Bodies, like they start running it down and you find yourself connecting. That level of shorthand, that's what culture is all about. We know that movies are a form of cultural production. But again, there's this second layer. You create communities around it. And people go to great length to debate and discuss and negotiate what is the best film and why it is that and what it says about the world. And we start to carve out what these conventions are, people like us who subscribe ourselves as such. And therefore, not only do people line up when an A24 movie comes out, it got its first number one just this year with Civil War, but even people in the business go, I'll take a pay cut just to work on this film because of what it means, the meaning behind it. It's almost like people saying, I'll take the league minimum just to play on the number one team to get a chip.
It's like Ray Allen taking the pay cut to go play with Miami Heat.
That's right. That's right. I cannot help but think about Frank Ocean when I think about A24, because there's so much we don't know about Frank Ocean. He's this enigma of sorts, this creative being that we know a lot about, but so little about at the same time. A24 feels that way to me. Creative engine that we know a lot about, but so little about at the same time.
And neither Frank Ocean or the A24 executives do that many interviews, which adds to the mystique, which is part of that enigma that we're talking about. I do want to go back to this run that they had from Moonlight to Lady Bird, Hereditary, Uncut Gems, Midsommar, The Whale, Everything Everywhere All at Once. That's a 6-year run of just hit, 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 hit. Yes, I know there's other titles in there that may have not been as big as those, but that is still impressive. And the first few continued with that model of budgeting them to be under $10 million, and then they knock it out of the park. But then Everywhere All at Once, slightly bigger budget, but then you get even more revenue. It's the first A24 film to gross over $100 million. And that same year that Everything Everywhere All at Once came out, the first studio in the Oscars' 95-year history to sweep the 6 major award categories. At this point, it isn't just this indie studio that is slightly punching above its weight class. It's winning all the same awards that Netflix and Amazon and all of these companies have literally spent tens of millions of dollars, and A24 has done it with a fraction of the budget and with a lot less attempts at bat.
Crushing it. There's not 100% success rate, but the wins are so much higher than any of the losses. I'm talking to Utah Tusk. Not only that, they are prolific AF. Like, they make a lot of films. They put a lot of films in the market, which says a lot about the relationship between creativity and commerce. When I think about A24, the only brand in this space that comes close to it in my mind is HBO. Different business model, obviously, but I'm talking about their curatorial lens. HBO, when it comes to like their shows, boy, can they pick them. They're like, oh, that's the one. And there are a few that like fall off the wagon, but by and large, when they swing for the fences, which is why it's so mind-boggling, unfathomable, that they would turn their streaming service into Max, completely remove the shortcut to your curatorial lens that has made you so successful in the marketplace, in the cultural zeitgeist. And there's people who are like, can A24 keep up this run? A part of me feels like, why not? They know who they are. They know their lane. I wouldn't say they have the right calculus, but they understand the right balance of being able to measure creativity with commerce and their cultural proximity.
And with that, we should talk about the past 2 years for A24 and the pressure that they may be getting, despite some of the things that you and I just talked about here, because they get this investment in 2022, $225 million from Stripes and Neuberger Berman that values the company at $2.5 billion. A24 was a company historically that didn't take much outside investment. Again, this started as a private equity play by Guggenheim Partners, and there was a small investment from Elridge back in 2012, but largely it was the founders that still had the controlling stakes in the business. But they get this investment, and this investment starts to say a few things, especially from some of the reports we saw in 2023, where A24 announces that they want to get into bigger budgets and they want to start acquiring IP. And part of this is understandable. 2023 was a rough year. Movies like The Green Knight or Waves or Bo is Afraid that didn't quite hit. It's now in this interesting point where they're being rumored to try to go after the Halloween franchise, but a lot of the filmmakers that got their start on A24 are using A24-inspired type things to go and create their other projects. It's hard not to look at Barbie, the 2023 highest grossing film of that year, Greta Gerwig's creation of that, and not look at what she did at Lady Bird and how influential that is. So I can see how it can be tough if you're a company like A24, you're having a down year. It can be tough to retain the talent when it is now time to go make the big budget. They'd go do it with Warner Brothers and they make the biggest movie of the year, taking a lot of the things that those directors learn from you.
Yeah. Thinking about the curatorial lens of A24, they never would have made a Barbie-like movie. But I think that the acquisition of the Halloween franchise, it is a perfect convergence of all things A24. In fact, when Rob Zombie rebooted the Halloween franchise, it was like, yo, that was really good. The second one was terrible, but the first one was really good because he has a point of view. I think that's the idea of A24, is that they don't put it all in the hands of the director to have the point of view. They have a point of view, which informs the kind of director they pick, kind of stories of detail, and so on and so on. But as people are putting in more money into A24, they're taking more money. Unless those people buy into the belief system, they buy into the way A24 sees the world, they're going to find themselves in some tension.
Let's take a break for our chart metric stat of the week. One of the original A24 films is Spring Breakers, which features our guy Gucci Mane and has a bunch of fun needle drops like Nicki Minaj's Moment for Life with Drake. This is a 13-year-old song that still gets at least 233 spins per week on terrestrial radio in the past year. Let's get back to the episode. Because those outsiders want to sell this asset, I still believe that there are plenty of hits to be made at the $5 to $10 or $15 million budget level, but they're now getting the pressure to go beyond that. And it was interesting looking at film studios that have gone through this type of thing before. And one that often came out was Miramax, and how Miramax was often seen as left of center, edgy. Granted, I don't think there's anyone like the Weinsteins that is involved with A24 and the making of their movies. But that was a film studio that eventually got acquired. And I don't think that Miramax was able to maintain that same type of energy once that acquisition happened. So it does make me think for a brand like A24, especially now when there's other brands like Neon and others that have been able to find similar type of success doing their own off-kilter type projects as well. How does A24 keep this going, given all of the pressures? They also represent a bit of this conundrum because Hollywood overall has been dealing with this broader challenge. They just had the lowest performing Memorial Day weekend at the box office in nearly three decades. I know that sometimes there's likely too much weight that's put on first week performance and you got to see what gets legs, but still, we're in this phase where a lot of the studios feel like they're getting pressure to not just revive big IP projects and have things that are slightly more original, even though they view that as being a bit more risky. But then on the other side, you have A24 looking at IP. So both sides are struggling, but looking at each other to try to find room and opportunity to develop.
While that is the case, 1,000,000%. And what I find compelling about A24 is that they understand the value of the media of people, that we become the vehicles by which A24's films get talked about, right? We share them on our social channels. We talk about them because they feel so distinct and like evocative. I went and saw Everything Everywhere All at Once because everyone was talking about it, not because of the trailers, right? Because everyone was talking about it. And building for social discourse, building for the network effect that happens from people talking, it reduces risk, it reduces cost, but more importantly, I think it creates far more credence than you could ever buy. And if you look at the films that were in that debut, there wasn't a lot of talking about them. The new Mad Max offering, Ryan Reynolds, there's a Garfield movie, but there wasn't a lot of talking about them. Unfortunately, people didn't show up, right? Nothing draws a crowd like a crowd. If everyone's talking about it, people are going to show up for it. But creating these exogenous shocks to the system that get people talking, I think that to me is the most risk-averse way to go to market in this industry where people are spending less time going to the cinema.
It's sad to say, but the movie can't just be good.
Yeah.
Because people can be like, oh, this is good. I'll wait for it to come out on streaming. And the film industry is littered with movies that were not commercially successful, but were some of the most beloved movies. Even movies like There Will Be Blood, having a huge budget and one of the best performances ever, did not make a lot of money after all the marketing. And we're just talking about Mad Max and Furiosa. Mad Max Fury Road, as beloved as that movie is, wasn't a breathtaking box office success after marketing it barely broke even too. You mentioned HBO earlier. You mentioned their rebrand, and I have similar feelings to you. The reason that I've heard, even though I don't necessarily agree with the reason, is that they're trying to grow internationally and people, especially outside of the US or outside of the HBO audience, think of the shows as dark. They think of it as very US-centric too. So if you're trying to have something that's a bit more global in reach, that's what you have. And it made me think about A24 because A24 is also a very American brand. And I hope that we're not in this place where as A24 expands, that there was eventually some type of rebrand to capture the broader appeal so that they can still have the auteur-driven films. They can still have the A24 Halloween movie or some type of IP that does very well worldwide.
So I had the opportunity to pitch HBO. I was worked on the pitch for the rebrand to Max, and the justification for the rebrand was that they were merging HBO and Discovery. And the idea was that HBO is lean in content. You got to lean in for it. Like you got all your attention. Of course, it's dark. It has all this colorism. It's a little taboo for middle America. And I roll my eyes when I hear that because that's ridiculous. But whatever. Like that was the thing, is that it's the coasts love it. But people in the middle, not so much. Again, that is erroneous. But I get what they're trying to say, that it's a certain slice of content that maybe a little too crotch shot for a lot of people. Got it. But they said that Discovery, like their content was a little more lean back. That you don't have to be like totally engaged to watch a home makeover show or to watch Shark Week. Like, you could just watch in the peripheral and be just fine. And the thinking was that if it is HBO focused, then you won't be able to widen the aperture to have more people tune in, because they were under pressure for growing the streaming service. And as a result, they're going to file down the teeth that is HBO in an effort to scale. And oh, brother, like, can it be more cumbersome? It's like having the best of the best and saying, we're not going to talk about that we have. You're not going to put your name on the marquee. We're going to put you in the back. And like, those who know will know. And you go, no, dude, you have the curatorial lens. The idea now is, why don't you apply that curatorial lens to other properties that are more mainstream? Tim Burton is a good example of this. Tim Burton, very clear curatorial lens, right? In a lot of ways, Tim Burton is a little off kilter. He's a little fringe in the way he sees the world. Dark, very dark. But you give him something like Batman and completely gives birth to an IP that is decades old, right? The Michael Keaton Batman, Good Night. That, in my mind, that was really the birth of like superhero films. I love Superman, but like the merchandising with Taco Bell back in the day, like a lot of that started.
Prince on the soundtrack.
Yes, Prince on the soundtrack. Like, exactly. That is massive. And of course, the numbers were through the roof, but it was done through a lens that was very much true to Tim Burton. That's what A24 has to do.
I agree with the lean back versus the lean in type thing, because I get it. Even as a consumer, there's some days where, hey, I don't know if I have it in me to watch this hour-long episode of Succession, Game of Thrones, whatever, but I can pop in and watch First Take and just see what they think about the NBA Finals or the NFL playoffs, whatever it is. So I get that. But I've never bought the middle of the country versus the coastal elites things, because you look at the shows that are popular in the middle of the country, like, I want to consider Yellowstone lean back. You got to pay attention to follow Yellowstone. I want to consider American Sniper lean back. You got to pay attention to follow those movies. Like, all of these movies or TV shows that did well in those parts of the country are also lean in content.
That's right. And if the argument is that HBO is like a lot of profanity, a lot of nudity, and I go, sure. But you mean to tell me middle America doesn't watch that kind of stuff? If that be the case, then Game of Thrones wouldn't have been Game of Thrones. What are we talking about here? And I think that to give credit to HBO, that like they had shows like Entourage that were very much lean back, or even Insecure. Like, they had shows that gave you that sort of dexterity and flexibility across the spectrum. But I think the want was scale. And when we try to scale things, it's like when you go to a banquet, the food is going to be mediocre. You know it, because they have to make a lot of it and they're pleasing a lot of different people. So make it lowest common denominator as possible. You're going to get bland food. And therefore, we don't expect anything much of it. But I think that you can scale the good by focusing on the curation of the good and say, hey, they ain't for everybody. And be okay with that. And I think, and I'm about to get on my soapbox in just a moment. I'll get off the soapbox in just a moment. Marketers know this sort of truism of marketing, that you can't target everyone. We know this factually. You can't target everyone. It's not only resource exhaustive, but it's also inefficient, because not everybody's going to like my product, right? Not everybody's going to like it. We know this intuitively. Yet any attempt to be discriminating about segments in an effort to scale is avoided by companies, marketers. We go, we want to scale. We want to get bigger. But then you're basically saying that I want to get everybody or as much as everybody as possible, as opposed to I want to focus on my people and I'm going to be patient enough to let the network effect happen. I'm going to be patient enough to let people do what people do. And unfortunately, the more money we put in things, the lower our patience goes, unless you're in technology, of course. Tech, we got patience out the wazoo. But everything else, no patience. I think you got to let the network effect happen. And I think if A24 continues to do what they have been doing, they'll win. But if they get caught up in the short-term P&L quarterly report, the 10K every year, where are we? as a North Star to how they operate their business, it's going to be another case study of how the mighty have fallen.
So with that, let's fast forward a few years. 2029, where is A24? Do we think that they do this successfully? Do we think that they get acquired by a major studio? Do we think that they get acquired by private equity? How do we think this plays out?
I would say that A24 will probably find themselves in different sort of genres of movies. To your point, we'll go back to Halloween because I'm praying for this. Like, I'm hopefully manifesting it as we say it out loud. We'll be even better, though, if they do Freddy, truthfully. But the hope is that they go to old properties and give them new life. And they don't feel like a reboot, but they feel like an alternate telling. Again, Batman, we've seen Batman revisited a couple times now, whether it's Tim Burton or Christopher Nolan. But in each of these revisitations, they don't feel redundant or any of their duplicity in the way they're done. My hope is that A24 will say, we need some commercial hits. We've always loved this. We want to give it a new point of view in the world. And then continue to give light to storytellers around the world.
I think they'll do it too. I don't think that it's impossible because IP doesn't mean that you're going to go acquire Indiana Jones. I think that would be crazy, especially after what we last saw. However, there's so many ways to look at this. We clearly talked about Halloween. It fits within that core competency of what A24 does well. Horror historically can be a low budget, high producing, especially in theaters, because there's a collective experience of seeing a horror film in crowds. And that adds to the profitability, especially at the box office. You were talking about Batman earlier. I think about the most recent Matt Reeves one. And when we saw those initial trailers and clips with Robert Pattinson and Paul Dano, it was going viral on Twitter that this looked like an A24 movie based on the vibes of it. What IP out there can have the A24 spin on it?
I think you're right. Like, it's beyond the aesthetic of things, but the manner in which the story is told requires a level of intentionality and thoughtfulness that I think that A24 will do. I mean, I would be terribly disappointed if they didn't, because we expect that of them now. And the hope is that the people who have infused them with cash to do more of it sees the world similarly. You know, it'd be interesting to look outside of horror, which, to your point, you don't need big stars, you don't need big money to make that happen, to look outside of horror and find other franchises that have sort of a slant to them that we normally wouldn't thought of as like exploring it that way. You know, it was interesting some years ago, it was 10 years ago, there was a doctorate trailer of Mrs. Doubtfire, and they changed the music. They put like horror movie music behind it. And I was like, dude, I want to see this film. Right? Like, it just gave the movie a completely different look. It made Mrs. Doubtfire look like a homicidal maniac. Like, he was a murderer. And I think that like everything could be shifted that way. I think Blumhouse has tried to do this a bit. Blumhouse basically said, we're going to live in this space of horror. We're going to, you know, excavate it in all the many ways that we can. There's not a curatorial lens by which they do that, which I think that where you get more misses than hits. The closest proximity to that, as far as films are concerned, is like a Jordan Peele or maybe a Quentin Tarantino or Christopher Nolan. Like, you know what you're going to get from those folks, and it can go into any space and really go, let's look at this thing differently. And you go, take me with you, because we trust them. And I think that A24 has a lot of credence to take us with them, and we'll trust them.
And especially if they are making bigger budget films, you can then continue to attract the Jordan Peeles. You could maintain right. The Greta Gerwigs. You could also maybe maintain the Denis Villeneuve's. Dune is one of the most commercially successful movies, and he had gotten one of his early films on A24 too. So we'll continue to see this play out. But Marcus, before we close this out, what's your favorite A24 film?
Ooh, my favorite A24 film. A film and a show. I got to do both. I would say my favorite film is probably Hereditary, because I am a huge horror movie fan. It's my favorite genre, full stop. And I've seen Hereditary at least 7 times, at least. And every time I see it, the hair stands up on the back of my neck. I still get chills every single time. I know what's going to happen, but I still get chills. That's what a horror movie is supposed to do for you. So Hereditary does that for me. When I think of the shows, I would have said Euphoria right off the bat, like Euphoria, done. But Beef was so well done. Oh my Lord. Like, it was so unexpectedly brilliant. And I didn't see a trailer for Beef. I heard about Beef because everyone was talking about Beef. On a platform, Netflix, where there is a endless well of content, I went and sought out this show and then evangelized for it after the fact. So much as I love Euphoria, and I love Euphoria, so well done. And on all spectrums, that show is brilliant. But Beef, maybe it's getting a little bit of the recency bias, but Beef for me, that was phenomenal.
I love that.
How about you? What's yours?
Mine is still Ex Machina.
Yes.
I think about the ones that make me think days after watching it, make me want to go down some Reddit thread about some thought that I had about this and this, make me think about society and how people are and operate and the relationship between robots and human beings, which will never become a tired story in Hollywood. Ex Machina is the one that I go back to.
That's a good pick. That's a good pick for sure.
Yeah. Marcus, appreciate you, man. This was a lot of fun, and it'll be fun to follow along with A24 and how it makes moves over the next few years.
4 years from now, where are we, A24? We're going to revisit this topic 4 to 5 years from now, see what's up.
Oh, for sure. For sure. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend. Send it to one or two people you think would really get value out of listening to this episode. And while you're at it, if you could rate and review the show, that would be great. Rate the podcast on Apple Podcasts, rate the podcast on Spotify, rate the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. That helps make sure that the word gets out about Trapital and what we're building here. Thanks again for listening. Talk to you next time.